Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a bit of a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world. Let's talk a little bit first and foremost with Dan Bongino. He is a candidate for the United States Senate from Maryland. He is running against the incumbent, Ben Cardin. He is a man who has a very interesting background, highly relevant to the subjects we're talking about here. He served as a special agent in the U.S. Secret Service for many years, including on the presidential protection detail during the presidency of George W. Bush. He brings to the subjects of national and homeland security, therefore, a considerable firsthand experience. And Dan, welcome back. Congratulations on the race thus far, and interested in hearing how it's going.
No, thanks for having me, Frank. It's been a great quarter for us. We blew away our previous fundraising record. We're setting all kinds of Maryland records for a Republican. We raised almost $700,000 in 3 months. Donors from every state, the grassroots operations growing. And we feel like we're in really fantastic shape now that we're in a three-way race. You know, the math, obviously, in a tautological statement, works a lot better for us than a three-way race. So we're extremely optimistic that we're going to be a November surprise.
Terrific. We're anxious to watch this. I imagine that you have been debating your opponents a bit, and I wonder if you have any insights for Mitt Romney as he prepares for this evening's performance with or appearance, I should say, with Barack Obama.
Well, I'd say this, Frank, and I don't mean this in a rhetorical way only. It's time to, you know, take the gloves off. Matter of fact, it's time to take the hand wraps off as well. We have to create very clear distinction. I call it aggressive but respectful politics. And if anyone's ever seen my YouTube videos out there, you know, some of them have been viewed 30 and 40,000 times, my speeches. I don't try to soften the edges. I tell people exactly what they need to hear, why reelecting this president is economically dangerous. And I would recommend that the governor do the same thing. I think he's an excellent debater. I think he went after Newt Gingrich in Florida. And I think that's the myth we need to see. And I think he'll do quite well.
Dan, let's talk a little bit about some of the subjects that I imagine you've been giving a lot of thought to. I suspect, though Maryland is not a border state, it certainly has the effects of lack of border security evident in your constituency. We also have, of course, those who have been in the line of fire, as you once were, coming under fire. Give us your thoughts on what is going on at the border these days, and what it means that we've lost another border patrol officer just in the space of the past 24 hours to what seems to be the increasingly aggressive and capable folks who are coming across that border armed to the teeth.
Right. And, we honor his sacrifice. It's incredible. These patriots were losing. It's disturbing. You know, I haven't served as a law enforcement officer for really my entire adult life, 17 years. The problem, Frank, is no one really treats border security seriously. I mean, the problem when you think about it is really easy to solve. And anybody who tells you otherwise is likely a career insider who just doesn't want to solve it. What they do is the same issue with entitlements. If you don't then have that third rail you can attack your opponent on. So there are no serious efforts made to solve the problem. You know, we could seriously curtail our problems at the border by constructing an actual border fence. You know, they say, there's hundreds of miles of border fence constructed. Nonsense. I've been down there. I've seen it. Most of that, about 10% of it is, a small portion of it, about 10%, is that double fencing with the roads in between and motion detectors and what you'd associate a robust border fence with. The rest of it is really just cow fencing, just double-stranded wire. You know, Frank, that's not an offense. That's a suggestion. But it's easy to solve. I mean, this is the country that sent a man to the moon. You know, we have rovers in deep space on Mars right now. Are we seriously making the argument that a border fence is too far of a leap? You know, again, you have to ask yourself, is this just politics or is this serious policy? I think the answer is obvious.
Yeah. Dan Bongino is our guest. He is a candidate for the United States Senate in Maryland, running on the Republican ticket. A career, as you mentioned, a law enforcement officer rising through the ranks to one of the most elite units in the United States government, the Secret Service detail protecting the president of the United States, George W. Bush. Let me ask you about a related issue concerning the border, Dan, and get your sense of what actually happened here. We've had, of course, a long-running effort made by critics of the administration to establish what actually happened with the so-called Fast and Furious scandal, a gun running operation. We had very recently, amazingly enough, one of the most wanted drug cartel kingpins, a fellow by the name of Jose Antonio Acosta Hernandez, better known as El Diago, actually apprehended with some of those Fast and Furious weapons in his possession. Where do you think the truth lies about what was going on there? Is this a larger scandal, or is this just one operation that went bad?
Well, Frank, Fast and Furious, there are so many disturbing angles to the story. Let me dig into just a couple right here. First, the president and the administration have to stop lying to the American people. Yes, lying. That's right. Not misdirecting, not mildly deceiving. They're lying to the American people. This administration says constantly, and matter of fact, he just said it again on Univision, and was called out, by the way, by ABC, Jake Tapper, that this operation was started under the Bush administration. Again, that's not a misdirection. That's just an outright lie. I was a federal agent for many years. I taught in the Secret Service Training Academy. I taught down at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center. The tactic used in the Bush administration was an established law enforcement technique that had been used for decades. It was called a controlled delivery. They put receivers on the gun. When the receivers were being removed, they immediately halted the operation because it would cause a public danger. The guns were tracked. Let's be clear on this. Gun walking, where the guns were allowed to walk, not tracked at all, and were just let go into the ether, was started in the Obama administration, the Department of Justice. There's no serious person is going to argue these points. He's misdirecting and lying to the American people. And frankly, it's disturbing, and it speaks to a bigger cloak of secrecy issue. You know, Fast and Furious, again, it just speaks to this larger problem, Frank, where it seems like the president wants to be the first one out there raising his hand when something goes right, but the last one out there to take responsibility when something goes wrong. And, you know, under what dictionary is that the definition of a real leader? You know, he really needs to step forward on this.
You have mentioned in the past, perhaps as an example of this lack of transparency and what was billed as the most transparent administration in history, what's been going on in connection with the scandal of some of your former colleagues in the Secret Service being allegedly involved in prostitution or at least hooking up with some hookers in Colombia. What's the latest on that, and how does that tie in your estimation, to this larger problem, Dan Bongino?
Well, again, this cloak of secrecy. You know, when the Secret Service scandal broke, the Secret Service, I thought, handled it appropriately. That, you know, those agents were terminated. Some were not, but were punished. I mean, either way, Frank, their careers are essentially over, even the ones that were held behind. Now, there's a DHS report out there from the IG's office, and I say out there because no one knows really where it is right now, and there are people up on the Hill that are starting to demand that report be released. Now, one of the reasons I believe that report is not being released is that the White House staff was likely involved in this as well. Now, do I know that for a fact? No, I haven't seen the report. But that's the point, Frank. Where is the report? you know, why is it when it involves the White House staff, all of a sudden the report's delayed, it'll take a few more weeks. Meanwhile, the Secret Service agents involved, and the military, by the way, were immediately punished, released, exposed, embarrassed, publicly humiliated. It just seems a little disingenuous. I mean, doesn't anybody think this is odd that, you know, and this is not, you know, some hegemonic regime here. This is the United States of America. And if this was a Republican administration, they would be publicly humiliated on the major network TV stations.
You bet. Night after night. Dan, we've got to pause for just a moment. We're going to be back with more with Dan Bongino, a former Secret Service agent, now running for the United States Senate from Maryland. You're not going to want to miss what he has to say about the other scandal at the moment, Benghazi Gate. Straight ahead.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
This hurricane season, coastal residents in the Southeast and the Gulf states are urged to prepare for the uncertain conditions they may encounter in the aftermath of a major storm and make their annual contingency plans. In addition to other emergency essentials, the American Red Cross and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security recommend residents keep a diversified emergency wallet that includes cash and traveler's checks. American Express traveler's checks provide an extra measure of financial safety and security. Keeping traveler's checks and a supply of cash in small bills offers storm victims payment options to make necessary purchases. Traveler's checks never expire, providing a secure payment method whenever emergencies occur, this year and in the future. Unlike cash, they're refundable if lost or stolen. American Express traveler's checks are available at banks, credit unions, and American Express Travel Service locations across the Gulf Coast and Southeast regions. For more information, please visit www.americanexpress.com/travelerschecks.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined once again by Dan Bongino. We have a special two-segment appearance by this candidate for the Republican Party in Maryland. He is running against Senator Ben Cardin. We have been talking about sort of domestic politics and scandals. Let me turn, if I can, with you, Dan, to some that have very significant domestic repercussions, obviously, but are sort of foreign in their origin. Specifically, I'm thinking about what happened as we understand it. And it's been, again, as you say, an example of very difficult extraction of information and changing stories, a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability on the part of the Obama administration about what actually went down in Benghazi, Libya on the 11th of September. What is it that you think is going on here? Is there a full-fledged scandal that is being covered up? And if so, what's its nature?
Yes, I do think there's a scandal here. And, Frank, you know, having spent a career in threat assessments with the Secret Service, you know, us being consumers, not producers of intelligence, you consume a lot of intelligence over a 12-year career. You really get an inside angle as to what's going on both domestically and on foreign soil. I say that because this threat assessment done in Benghazi on the actual threat to the ambassador and U.S. personnel on the ground was either one of two things, and there is no third option. It was either done incompetently, which I do not believe. I always found our CIA, DIA, NSA, and our intelligence men and women to be extremely competent and true patriots. So I don't believe that. But the second option, it was done competently. The threat assessment was viable, and I think the requests for extra security show that it was, and was ignored. Now, your listeners and the general public have to start asking themselves, why would it be ignored? Now, again, I can't prove this now. I don't have the information, but was it ignored for political reasons? That's an honest question that I think needs to be answered. Was an effort made to stifle intelligence that wasn't reflective of a positive kind of Arab Spring kind of an atmosphere on the ground? Did they not want it out there before the election that the situation in Benghazi had significantly deteriorated? I mean, these are real questions, Frank. I mean, you've been on the inside for a long time. You've probably heard these questions being bantered about back and forth. But with this administration, it just seems that was security sacrificed expediently to give the perception that their intervention had some positive outcome, when in fact in Benghazi, I think it's obvious now that it didn't.
Dan Bongino, based on what we have heard from the intelligence community, including reports that within 24 hours, they had a pretty good bead that this was not an episode in which people who were upset about a video that, frankly, practically nobody has ever seen out of California were demonstrating, and then it just sort of went bad from there, but rather was a premeditated, planned, carefully and methodically and violently executed attack. And yet it took, the better part of 2 weeks for the administration to sort of own up to it, the intelligence community for that matter, to seemingly take the fall for it. What's your reading on this? Was it the effort to suppress bad news at a time that it would be politically inexpedient, or is there a sort of a larger rot here, which I must tell you I'm inclined to, which is that the administration is determined to promote this narrative that it's always our fault, and particularly when it comes to offending Muslims and Sharia blasphemy?
Well, again, when it comes to this, you have to ask very simple questions, which I think you're asked. 5 days later, Susan Rice, hopefully someone who has access to intelligence at the highest levels, you would think, went on national television and said that it was a result of some absurd video who no one had even seen. Now, why would she do that? Again, I'm a believer in modern logic. Everybody took the class in college or high school. What are the only possible answers? Either Susan Rice did not pay attention to the intelligence that was available 24 hours later, so 4 days later she was still ignoring it, or she went on TV and lied. If you could present to me a third option, I'm not trying to be an overly partisan political candidate. I'm just giving you what are facts obvious to anyone. She either lied for political reasons or was completely incompetent in her role and just didn't pay attention. Frank, I would argue that either one is extremely disturbing. And I had met Susan Rice in the White House quite a bit. She's very nice. We're all very nice. I didn't get to be the shortstop for the Orioles because I was a nice guy. I just wasn't good enough. I'm sorry. She's not performing in her role. If this is not, I would say that, she has to resign. I can't imagine she wouldn't maintain even a modicum of credibility. And I'd like to know in the administration who threw her, over the overboard and said, hey, you're going to go out there and be the fall guy and try to keep this absurd story alive for just a few more days so we can preserve some modicum of political credibility. But I think you're right. It does speak to this larger narrative that, the U.S. is the big bad guy in the world. And if we were just to lead from behind, which is nonsense, doesn't make any sense, that the world would be a better place. Someone's going to fill that vacuum, and it's not going to be someone with our American values, I assure you.
That's for sure. It happens, as you know, Dan Bongino, that the same day that attack took place in Libya, there was an attack on our embassy in Egypt. Fortunately, nobody was killed, but nonetheless, the flag was taken down, desecrated, the flag of Al-Qaeda run up, and other very ominous threats made to our diplomatic personnel and compound there. Apparently, with the acquiescence, if not the active support, of the Muslim Brotherhood, and it seems its president now, Mohamed Morsi. Your opponent, Ben Cardin, is the chairman of the subcommittee of the Foreign Relations Committee that oversees foreign aid. Kay Granger, a Republican subcommittee chairman over on the Appropriations Committee in the House, has blocked foreign aid to Egypt under these circumstances. Would you be calling on Ben Cardin to do the same? And what's his view of this?
Absolutely. I mean, Frank, where is the, you know, sometimes some of the components of our liberal media, you know, they tend to, they don't see America the same way real Americans do. They don't. You know, I remember when President Bush, and, you know, you can have agreements or disagreements with his economic policy, but I think his foreign policy was solid, kept America safe. You know, when he got up with that bullhorn and had that post 9/11 moment, you're going to hear us all soon. You know, America needed that. And of course, what did the media do? They come out with this, well, is it a cowboy moment? And, you know, sometimes America needs a cowboy. We're a country of cowboys. And not uncontrolled aggression, but, you know, we need a leader. Where is Senator Cardin and the president on? I mean, you asked about foreign aid. I'll go even further. Forget foreign aid. That should have been off the table immediately. They should have said, until our embassy is secured, unless there's a mile radius around our embassy, absolutely cleared out tomorrow morning, forget the foreign aid. That's off the table. Loan forgiveness is off the table as well. Matter of fact, we're going to double the interest rate on our loan, a little hyperbole, but the loan forgiveness should have been off the table. And then third, there's going to be a travel ban to the United States. We're going to start revoking any diplomatic visas. No one's going to enter onto our soil until you can establish to us that you're ready to act like a civilized nation would. I mean, what greater attack is there than to walk onto sovereign U.S. soil in a foreign country, rip our flag down, tear it apart, burn it, and then put up an Al-Qaeda flag? And what are we doing? We're apologizing for a movie, an absurd, ridiculous movie by some idiot? I mean, Frank, I hate to sound, but it's true.
Yeah.
I mean,
Dan, let me interrupt you because I do want to talk about one other thing quickly that I think you may have some insights into. We'll be getting into it a bit later in the program. But there's a report that the Chinese have hacked into the White House military office, WAMO. What do you know about it? And do you think that's credible? And what does it mean in your estimation?
Well, I've worked with WAMO quite a bit. You know, WAMO, WACA, the White House Communications Agency, the Secret Service, they all work in tandem on presidential dance trips. It likely is credible. I think, as you and I both know, there's no finer mind on national security than you. There's a very strong, and I don't use that word qualitatively, Chinese espionage effort directed at IT infrastructure. So it doesn't surprise me at all. It seems to be most of the information that they tried to hack into was the unclassified side. You know, there's the CIPRNet on the classified side. So I don't know what was compromised, but I think it should be a harbinger of things to come. I think the Chinese understand that the information war may be the only war that matters in the future, especially with the growing drone technology. I mean, can you imagine?
And they're certainly working it hard. Dan Bongino, we have to let you go. I appreciate you giving us so much of your time. I know this is the crunch moment for you on the campaign. We wish you the best of luck. We appreciate very much your past service to our country, what you're working on now, and what I'm confident will be a lot of very important service in the future. Come back to us again if you would soon. Next up, Joseph A. Klein joins us to talk about a brand new book, Lethal Engagement, about Barack Hussein Obama, the Islamists, and the UN. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hi, NBA forward Kevin Durant from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Here with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
And that's a slam dunk.
Whether you like to shoot hoops like me, skateboard, ride a bike,
or dance on your roof, just move it your way.
For an hour a day. Because moving every day puts you on the offense towards a stronger you.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
I couldn't have said it better myself, Bugs.
So be a player.
Be a player.
Get up, play, and move it your way. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
You said it at www.letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The political impact of tonight's first presidential debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney will only be partly a function of the two men's actual performance. It will also be a product of how they did relative to expectations. President Obama's handlers have assiduously lowered those for their candidate, claiming he hasn't debated in 4 years and is rusty. This is the typical sensible approach, since it tends to support after-the-fact claims that the candidate in question performed better than expected. Unfortunately for Mr. Romney, a chief surrogate, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, did just the opposite last Sunday. He predicted Romney would do so well, the entire narrative of this race is going to change. We'll see. But if it doesn't, the fault may lie less with the candidate than with his spokesman. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
In 1966 in Anchorage, Alaska, a talented child was born. He would go on to be one out of only 11 Alaskans to make it to the major leagues. The odds of him striking out more than 3,000 hitters? 1 in 33 million. The odds of this pitcher being selected to the Major League Baseball All-Star Game 6 times? 1 in 48 million. The odds of this fast-balling philanthropist winning the World Series 3 times? 1 in 3 million. The odds of this man having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. Hi, I'm Kurt Schilling. Learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism is getting closer to home. From 1 in 5,000 only 20 years ago, today 1 in 110 children are diagnosed. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement. And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Joseph A. Klein. He is a reporter for Front Page Magazine and Canada Free Press, where he reports about the United Nations, which is the subject of his latest book, a very important contribution to our understanding of the challenge that we're facing at the moment. It's entitled Lethal Engagement, Barack Hussein Obama, the United Nations, and Radical Islam. And Joseph, I can't imagine a more timely book against the backdrop of what's been going on at the UN, in the Middle East, the apologies, the video that is supposed to be responsible for all this upset and so on. So thank you for both doing the book and for joining us to talk a bit about it. Welcome back.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Let's talk, I guess, most immediately about sort of the nature of the enemy we're up against, as you've sort of come to understand it and written about it in Lethal Engagement. And we'll take it from there as to how it manifests itself in these various enterprises and institutions.
We're dealing with a global jihadist movement, a jihadist meaning a struggle, not so much internally within each individual as the Islamist apologists would have us believe that term means, but rather a struggle with infidels, anyone who does not follow Islamist orthodoxy. And this is heating up in two dimensions. First of all, the most virulent manifestation, which is the terrorist attacks initiated primarily by Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. And Al-Qaeda continues to be a strong force that's spread out now from Afghanistan and Pakistan all out throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa and elsewhere. But as insidious and perhaps more dangerous in the long term is what Robert Spencer has called the stealth jihad, which is the use of our own laws and institutions against us, infiltrating as the Muslim Brotherhood program of action that was discovered during the course of the Holy Land Foundation trial lays out, which is essentially to infiltrate our institutions from within, pervert our laws, and gradually put themselves in a position of leadership in our governmental and our civil society institutions to spread Sharia law. This is what's happening, and this is what President Obama has failed to recognize, and in my judgment, as I lay out a lethal engagement, has actually helped to facilitate.
Yeah, and that's what I want to get into with you, Joseph Klein, is it's not just that he's uninformed or even willfully blind about this. As I understand your thesis in lethal engagement is that he's complicit in facilitating this Muslim Brotherhood influence operation against our government and advancing its agenda of trying to promote and insinuate Sharia into countries like ours. Is that correct?
Well, that's exactly right. And this started really with his speech in June of 2009 in Cairo to the Muslim world, in which he lauded all of the contributions of Islam and essentially put down the West, including the United States, saying that the Muslims' problems today were the product of colonialism, Cold War fighting over territory, and our ignorance and stereotyping of Islam. He praised Islam as a religion of peace and tolerance, and he did so from Al-Azhar University in Cairo, and as I described anecdotally in Lethal Engagement, that very university had purged a student and a professor, and I tell their story, for questioning the orthodoxy of Sharia law. The administrators not only expelled them, but turned them over to the Egyptian state police, where they were thrown in prison and tortured. And he was saying from that very podium in that university how enlightened that university was. I think he called it a lantern of a beacon of knowledge and so forth.
Joseph, let me ask you about a related point, because I think this really goes to the heart of what the administration is up to at the moment, and what we saw so much in evidence in the aftermath of the attacks on our diplomatic missions and personnel in the post September 11th, 2012 period, namely the agenda of an organization known as the Organization of Islamic Cooperation within the UN and the Muslim Brotherhood and others who, you know, are working in their ways to the same end, namely to try to suppress freedom of expression. The blame of a video and so on was sort of central to this this most recent series of episodes. Tell us, based on your study of what the UN is about these days, Joseph Klein, as well as the analysis that you've included in Lethal Engagement, what role this so-called OIC is playing, and how serious a threat this agenda of theirs, their Sharia blasphemy agenda, represents?
Well, it's a very serious problem because the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is a 56-member organization of Islamic states, second only in size to the UN itself, have managed over the more than a decade to ram through the UN Human Rights Council, which Obama decided the United States should join, and the General Assembly, a whole series of resolutions making quote, defamation of religions, international crime, a violation of international law. And the video that you're talking about was simply used as a further justification last week in a whole series of speeches at the General Assembly to press this agenda for criminalizing insults, defamation, whatever you want to call it, of religions, and particularly Islam. And what the danger is that it has become part of the international norms fabric that free speech does not extend to what people would call the abuse of free speech, and they define abuse as any criticisms that offend the sensibilities of the adherents of one faith or another, again, particularly Islam. General Ban Ki-moon, in his speech to the General Assembly, made that very clear. He spent time lambasting the video and saying that irresponsible statements that are provocative are not protected by the right of free expression. And yesterday, I attended a press conference at the United Nations by the Deputy Secretary General, Jan Eliasson, and he went so far as to say that free expression is a, quote, gift and a, quote, privilege extended by the UN Declaration, Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And if you examine that declaration, it's conditional because it talks about free expression, but then it says, well, but that can be limited if there's a threat to order and morality and so forth. And what the Islamists have done, and I described this in Lethal Engagement, and it's all coming to pass, is that they have taken that Universal Human Rights Declaration and turned it on its head by incorporating into it the norm that free speech stops when there is expression that is deemed insulting to
Islam. Yeah, in fact, this is part of their own version of the Universal Declaration, as you know, Joseph Klein, the so-called Cairo Declaration, which completely distorts and rearranges all rights and makes them subject to Sharia. Joseph, I'm so sorry we have to go. This is a fascinating conversation, a most important book, especially since, as you know, as a Harvard-trained law school graduate, that our Constitution says that right of free speech is not a gift. It is an unalienable right in this country, and it is in peril, folks, and you need to know how so and what you can do about it by checking out this marvelous, really important new book by Joseph A. Klein, Lethal Engagement, Barack Hussein Obama, the United Nations, and Radical Islam. Check it out. Joseph, please come back to us again very soon. Vitally important material and as I say, exceedingly timely.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Do you see that doggy in the shelter?
Hi, I'm Buddy, that adorable puppy you adopted from the Humane Society.
Meow. I'm Whiskers, a fluffy kitty, just waiting for someone to love me.
When you adopt a pet, we hope your new furry friend will become a cherished member of your family. And as Buddy and Whiskers will tell you, the key to success is following the rules to love by.
Woof, that's right. Please give me food, water, and exercise every day. To stay healthy, I need the same kind of things you need.
Talk to me. I like hearing your voice.
You're my best friend. Please don't stay mad at me or lock me up as punishment. Remember, I'm probably going to live 10 to 15 years, so take care of me when I get old.
One day you'll need someone to take care of you, too.
A message from the Montgomery County Humane Society. Visit www.mchumane.org for the complete rules to love by.
Be your best friend for life.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
In Washington, Hugh Hewitt has the diagnosis.
They don't understand the need for speed.
Oh, we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get it done. Open amendment process, blah, 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 blah.
Not in the least bit clued in to the sense of urgency, but I don't think the Beltway is.
I'm just beginning to think it is a Beltway disease.
Kind of an invisible wall separates them from what the people think.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We're joined by Adam Credo. He is a senior writer for the Washington Free Beacon, having covered various beats in Washington for some time, including as a political reporter for the Washington Jewish Week. He now covers national security for the Free Beacon. And I want to talk about a couple of stories that you've filed this week, Adam. If I may, I'd like to ask you to indulge me and talk a bit one that your colleague and ours as well, Bill Gertz, has written several reports about now, involving a story that is just of stupendously great importance, it seems to me, namely reports that there have been penetrations of our White House's military office, arguably one of the most sensitive agencies within the United States government, responsible for command and control of the U.S. nuclear deterrent by the president. The football is the term that's usually used to describe the individual who's always assigned to be with the president carrying the launch device. But what do we know about China and its efforts to hack into that extraordinarily sensitive communications node?
Thanks for having me. You're right. This is a tremendously important story, and the implications for our national security are far-ranging and very large. Now, I mean, to pull it back a little bit, these types of attacks are waged on the U.S. every day from a range of people, including even the Iranians. But the Chinese are the best at it. And while publicly we always see them saying, well, these are just hackers, these are people, you can be assured for the most part that these are state-sponsored attacks. Why else would they be hitting the White House? And like you said, not just the White House. This is not the secretary's computer or a computer somewhere in the West Wing. This is the White House military office, and they do handle all of the top secret information, including, like you said, nuclear data, the football. And the reason that this is so important is because these computers are the gateway to potentially ending the world, starting a war if launch codes were obtained. And I mean, we can't even begin to speculate on the frightening scenarios that could unfold from there. So rightfully, what we've seen since the Free Beacon and Bill Gertz broke this story on Sunday is that lawmakers on Capitol Hill are demanding answers. They want the White House to provide details of the attack, particularly from the White House Communications Agency, and they run the Situation Room and other classified communications. And I do think now that this story has come out that they do owe us a bit of an explanation and the American people an explanation of why the networks are not as secure as we'd certainly expect them to be. And one interesting note on this thing, officials, according to Bill Gertz's most recent report, said that the president was not notified about the cyber attack. So I'd be curious to find out why precisely that is. Did that not rise to the level of bringing the president into it?
Yeah, you'd think this was kind of important for him as well as for the rest of us. And Adam Kreta, we're very grateful for what the Washington Free Beacon is doing to keep the light on this one. We'll be talking, I know, later in the week with Bill Gertz about it as well, but appreciate your update on it. Coming to two stories that you've reported, both of which are very important. One is a little complicated, and probably we need to do a little bit of groundwork laying here, but tell us about Blood Gold, a story you covered yesterday.
Absolutely, and this is a story that I've been covering for a while now and will continue to write about, and it centers on an oil mogul, a man by the name of Case Law. And Case founded a company called KMAC International, and what came to light actually several years ago now, and the United Nations has investigated, is that Case and some of his siblings who are involved in KMAC and some of his friends and also the NBA great Dikembe Mutombo, of all people, were involved, the UN claims and others claim, in a plot to purchase gold. They did not know exactly the provenance of that gold, but as the scenario developed, they learned that the gold they were looking to purchase at obviously a very reduced rate, they would have made a lot of money on this deal. The gold was being fronted by a Congolese warlord, a very, very terrible man who actually is cited as a war criminal by the United Nations. And even after finding out about this, the documents in the UN testimony allege, Lal and KMAC International proceeded with this. Now, why is this important? Not just is this an American company, and they obviously should not be involved in things like this, but Case Law, in particular, was a trade advisor to Barack Obama in the White House as recently as 2010 and 2011, though his name has somehow been removed from that list since this whole plot unfolded. So that's exactly why we want to pay attention to it. This is a man who's advising the White House, or at least has advised the White House on global trade issues, and he's involved in a botched plot to purchase gold from a warlord. Now, the deal did not go through, and several lawsuits have resulted from it, one being a civil lawsuit that recently came to an end in Dallas, Texas. The man who owned a Gulfstream jet sued Lal and KMAC International for breaching the contract that they had on this jet. Allegedly, the jet was used to transport this gold and transport the cash to carry this gold, and the jet was actually seized by authorities when the deal was about to go down. And the jury in Texas awarded $32.4 million in damages resulting from this plot. And I think we're curious to see, looking forward, if criminal charges actually arise from this really weird mess.
Yeah. Well, it certainly has a particular salience as it relates to a guy who has been a very substantial contributor to President Obama, as well as you say, a guy involved in advising on trade policy. But it has a larger implication, of course, in terms of the kind of involvement that the U.S. government has had, or at least obliquely had, in one of the really horrific crimes against humanity in that part of the world. And that's saying something, namely, you know, the Rwandan efforts to engage and exploit conflict materials, minerals, and so on in neighboring Congo. We'll be looking for more from you on this one as well. And thanks, Adam Credo, again, for the reporting you're doing on it. Let me turn finally to a story that you had also yesterday in the Washington Free Beacon, Adam, about terror Twitter, as you call it, and the failure, seemingly, of the FBI to try to prevent known terrorists, designated terrorists, from using social networking in ways that could be very dangerous indeed.
Yeah, this is actually a very puzzling story for a number of reasons. Twitter is obviously a social networking platform that millions of people are on, and millions upon millions of people are using across the globe. But mixed into these users is a very large contingent of terrorists and extremist clerics, according to lawmakers on Capitol Hill, who are now petitioning the FBI to order Twitter to remove these jihadist Twitterers and other U.S.-designated terrorist groups. Now, what's most shocking about this is that this is not a handful of unknown people whose names you would not know. These are full-blown terrorist operations such as Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Taliban even, they're all on Twitter, and according to lawmakers on Capitol Hill, are not only inciting violence over this medium, but they're using it to recruit. And given the number of people on Twitter, this could be a very fertile ground for them to recruit new members and incite violence across the globe.
The members of Congress who have raised an alarm about this include Congressman Ted Poe, Bob Turner, Anne-Marie Burkle, Michael McCaul, Bill Johnson, Gus Bilirakis, and an old friend of this program, Trent Franks. This is obviously a very considerable concern because, as you've indicated in your piece, this can amount to material support to these terrorist organizations in the form of a communications platform that, Adam Credo, as you put it, could enable them to coordinate, recruit, and hone their terrorist activities online. Unimaginable that this isn't something that's getting more serious and effective action from the FBI. And do you have a sense of why that is at this point?
Yeah, it's unclear to me. Congressman Poe speculated that potentially the FBI, U.S. intelligence, are relying on some of these more prominent Twitter accounts and other organizations to collect intelligence. They're disseminating publicly a lot of their documents, a lot of their recruiting tools, their websites, these types of things. But Congressman Poe actually made a good point. If the U.S. government is relying on open Twitter accounts as a vein to mine in the intelligence community, that would show a woeful lack of consideration of other intelligence methods. Why are we relying solely on Twitter, or primarily even on Twitter, for these types of activities? I think the really important piece here is to take into account the protection of U.S. citizens and U.S. interests abroad, and we see they've come under attack, and Twitter even played a role in this, in the attacks on the Egyptian embassy. So I think those concerns might be larger.